Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
On this episode of Big Boys Don't Cry, we discuss the 2008 film What Happens in Vegas. You don't have to have seen the film to enjoy the podcast, but if you do listen without having seen it, just be aware there may be spoilers. Enjoy. I ate too fast because we were late and now I'm feeling a bit sick. So apologies gets worse.
What was for dinner tonight?
It was just an M&S pasta, like, ready meal. So, a regular meal, a nice one, but still, a ready meal nonetheless, which when you lead busy lives like us podcast boys and you've got to fit podcasting into your busy schedule, it's what you have to do, you know? But you know, they have cheese on top, you cook it for the recommended time, that cheese on top is a gloopy mess, right?
Yeah.
Like, you need to give it at least an extra 10 minutes under the hot thing to get the cheese actually bubbling, you know?
What you need is one of the creme brulee blow torches. And then you cook it for the recommended time. It's all fine apart from the gloopy mess at the top. And then what you do is you blowtorch it on top and make it all crispy and lovely.
You know what? I never really thought I'd be at the point in my life where I think what I really, really need right now, like what I need most in the world is a blowtorch. But here we are.
Everybody needs a blowtorch. Blowtorches are the most useful tool in the kitchen.
I never saw myself as a metal worker, but yeah.
And look, if the people won't leave you alone knocking on your front door, blowtorch will sort them out. I'll be scared if you turn up at the door with a blowtorch and just turn it on.
Yeah. Next time the Jehovah's Witnesses come, they're going to get the blowtorch straight away.
Come election time, people come leafleting and saying, you should really vote for our candidate. Ugh. Get out the blowtorch.
It's not a bad idea, actually, because our 12-year-old Tory candidate keeps coming around leafleting.
You should, alternatively, invite them in for a cup of tea and then lock them in the cupboard.
I was going to say, invite them around for a cup of tea and then get the blowtorch out.
Lock him in the cupboard and then get the blowtorch out.
Yeah, here's your tea. put them in the cupboard and then just blowtorch the cupboard down. But nobody who has small children has a cupboard that isn't like a danger to life as soon as you open it. So just in terms of stuff like falling on you.
You don't even need to have kids for that to be the case, Paddy.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Our cupboards in this house before the little monster arrived were already a complete hazard full of nonsense.
Yeah. That means you're just prepped. You're a prepper.
I'm ready for it. Psychologically prepared.
Yeah, before the gremlin came along, you're ready for it.
Exactly.
Gremlin or goblin, which do you prefer?
I like goblin. I do like goblins. I mean, gremlin is also true, but when you say goblins, I always think of Labyrinth and the Goblin King, which is
that because
nice.
I remind you of the Babe?
The Babe with the power. Exactly. So yeah, I like Goblin, but also Gremlin. She contains multitudes of...
Look, your daughter, Walt Whitman, all one word.
Exactly.
Now, Gremlin is funny because, you know, My Neighbor Totoro is like my son's favorite film, and the translation of, you know, the little round ball guys, in some translations it's Gremlin, in others it's Sprite. In the stage show, I think they said Sprite, but in the English dub that we watch, she calls them Soot Gremlins. So that's his favourite thing.
I guess that depends on the translation of the original Japanese and who's translating at the time. And then what they felt. I guess maybe when My Neighbour Totoro was first translated into English, they felt that audiences would understand the idea of a gremlin more than a sprite for the audience, maybe.
I think they just didn't want to confuse it with a refreshing lemonade drink.
Exactly.
Particularly for the UK market, where mentioning Sprite is seen as a bit of a crime when we have R. White's lemonade.
Precisely. How dare you have Sprite or 7-Up when we have the great British R. White's, the Brexit choice of lemonades. Are you a fan of R. White's?
Secret lemonade drinker. You've seen the advert, right?
I'd never seen it before until you sent it to me.
This is the point as well. I know, like, now 300 episodes in, we're just recycling all the old material. We're like two old guys, like Statler and Waldorf, just being like, have I told you this story before?
It's not deliberately recycling the material. It's just us forgetting what we've talked about already.
It's like, about this stupid advert from the 70s starring Elvis Costello's dad as the secret lemonade
Barry drinker. Costello.
Barry Costello, that's the guy.
Yeah.
He loves his lemonade, man.
Absolutely loves it. Elvis, vastly better song than anything Elvis Costello ever created.
I know you're not a fan.
I'm not a fan of Elvis Costello. Fucking useless.
That's harsh. That's very harsh for a Friday night.
I'm here. I'm here taking scalps.
Cracking skulls, like that man in the Breakfast Club. Yeah, you know what else is also harsh? Having to watch the film What Happens in Vegas.
Mate, this movie was so shit. I'm sorry.
Let's get into it then.
This came in the era of awful, awful rom-coms full of terrible human beings.
Yeah.
And it shows. If you look at these, like, the late 2000s rom-coms are where they're at.
Sorry, I'm just typing it in to get the Wikipedia page up. And what happens? It's because what happens when you die is the top.
When you die, you no longer have to worry about what Ashton happens Kutcher. In Vegas. Unless you go to hell, where it's on repeat with Ashton Kutcher sitting next to you talking about how great he was in the movie.
Which is something he would totally do.
This is exactly what he'd do. Do you imagine that maybe the DVD release of this had his commentary on it, star commentary.
Oh, jeez, they used to do that, didn't they?
Yeah.
For the Gen Zs and Gen Alphas who are listening to this, a DVD was a thing, a digital versatile disc.
I think they know what a DVD is.
I don't know, man. Like, it's all, you know, TikTok and Skibbity Toilet these days. I don't think they know what a DVD is. But, no, like, it's actually quite weird. I bet you clips from like DVD commentaries where like the big star would be doing it, this is going to be like the next trend on TikTok. People are going to be like, oh my god, the old people used to have this, it's amazing. You know how they find things like Metallica and then it suddenly becomes a thing, like, oh, never heard of Metallica before, you know? It's like that. This is going to be the next thing, DVD commentaries with like The Rock doing his commentary on one of his action films or whatever. That's going to like blow up on TikTok. That's my prediction.
And the thing is that some of them were really good fun. Like, I remember that I had the Jackass movie on DVD, because of course I did.
No.
And you used to have the commentary with the cast alongside it.
Yeah.
And not only would it be incredibly funny, but they would also give really interesting snippets of trivia about the making of the film.
Yeah.
Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, where Arnold Schwarzenegger does the commentary, are genuinely almost as entertaining as the movies themselves, because he's basically watching them back as a fan and being like, oh, I love this bit where I explode this guy's head. And it's really good fun to watch. So you get the little trivia bits, but you also get Arnold Schwarzenegger genuinely being enjoyed about watching a movie like Total Recall. That's awesome.
I love that.
Really good. It was actually a genuinely brilliant thing, and I think it's a bit of a shame that we don't have that anymore.
That feels like something from a bygone era, doesn't it? That feels Victorian compared to the fast pace of today's culture, doesn't it? Just like someone sitting down to watch a 2-hour movie and talking over it to give the commentary to be like an extra. Nobody watches movies anymore anyway, but like...
These days it's just TikTok videos. I don't watch films.
Oh. Yeah. TikToks and Skibbity Toilet. I'm telling you, that's all it is. I'm down with the kids.
But I think the thing is, right, that like, I think there's also the oversaturation of films, where back in the DVD days, you'd have a limited number of movies that you could watch. So actually you would have the time, if you bought a movie you really liked,
yeah,
to then watch those additional features. Whereas now, there's maybe not as much of that kind of material, because not only is it cheaper to just put the movie out, let's be honest, they can just shove it on a streaming service, but also there's the element of, well, I could rewatch this movie with the director's commentary, or I could watch 50 other movies like this.
Or I could watch my TV that has maybe up to 100 channels if you're lucky, but you still have to watch the thing that's on, like, at that moment in time. Like, you might have had satellite TV in those days, but there was no pausing live TV, there was no recording TV, or you recorded a VHS if it was what you really wanted to watch. But, like, you couldn't open up a vast library of content. So yeah, if you got a new DVD, you probably were going to watch that film quite a few times and watch it with the commentary.
Yeah, yeah, because equally you were spending money on something that you genuinely enjoyed.
Yeah.
And you still get those kind of things sort of on Blu-rays these days.
But then you're a Blu-ray guy.
Are you not a Blu-ray guy?
No, I haven't got space in my house. Like, who has space in their house for a bunch of Blu-rays? Who are you people?
I've got Blu-rays. Have you actually? Blu-rays. Yeah, I've got Blu-rays for a selection of films that I really like.
Oh, no,
so
you're a Blu-ray guy.
I have a variety
who
of...
Who even has a Blu-ray player?
Anybody who owns a games console with a disc drive. That's who. So I don't own a Blu-ray player, but I do own a PlayStation 5 and a PlayStation 4. So I have got on Blu-ray, I've got a variety of Arnold Schwarzenegger movies.
You know I don't buy games on discs, right? I've always been a cartridge man, like my entire life. I console wars of the 90s, I was always a cartridge guy. I can't deal
with
it.
You wanted that expensive, inferior platform. Of storing data. So in terms of stuff I've got on Blu-ray alongside the Arnold Schwarzenegger movies that I relatively recently got a few of them just to watch when I was watching the baby at night to keep me entertained.
Oh, nice.
I do have, and that was kind of out of the realization that a lot of them aren't on streaming services, and then thinking to myself, actually, I probably should get these movies because streaming services are getting worse and worse. So kind of need to get stuff.
No, you're right. And actually, recently I've been thinking about this in relation to the fact that I used to own every Studio Ghibli movie on DVD and I sold them. And that is honestly one of my biggest regrets in life.
And now if you went to go and buy them, if you ever want to buy them back, you'll have to spend like three times what you originally spent on them.
Yeah. Right now they're all on Netflix, but who knows how long that's going
to
last.
Yeah. Yeah. I imagine they'll probably go over to Disney Plus because Disney owns the distribution rights. But yes, you never know what kind of legal quagmire stuff is in.
Yeah, sorry, you were going to say something profound.
Oh, yes. So on Blu-ray, I have The Disaster Artist.
Oh, nice.
I have Macbeth. I have Dread.
McFassbender,
yeah. I have got all of the Alien movies, including Prometheus.
Wait, Alien versus Predator?
No, but the main one. So I've got Alien, Aliens, Alien 3.
Oh, well,
Aliens,
I know what to get Prometheus. You to complete your collection for your next birthday.
I need Alien Covenant as well.
An Alien Romulus.
Yeah, I've got Stoker. Do you remember Stoker?
Oh, I hated that film. You like it.
I love that film. It's so off the wall. I've got, what else have we got here that's mine? Katie's got a handful. Only Lovers Left Alive.
Nice.
Mad Max Fury Road.
Not seen it.
I've got, it's possibly the greatest action movie ever made. It's genuinely amazing.
Wow. Yeah.
It's so good. You wouldn't have thought the fourth Mad Max movie would be the greatest, but it's genuuely possibly the one of the best films ever made and possibly the greatest action film. Have you not?
Oh, no.
Well, watch Fury Road and then you won't need to watch the rest, to be honest with you. I've got The Thing. I've got LA Confidential. I've got Crimson Peak. I've got Blade Runner. And then I've got a few TV series. So I've got Human Planet. I've got Hannibal. I've got Channel Zero in terms of TV.
Nice. I was at a friend's house the other day and someone said they didn't like Blade Runner and I almost stormed out of there. Not like they hated it, but just like they found it underwhelming, which I don't know if that's almost worse.
Right. Were they like, that's not got enough action for me?
I can't remember.
Did it need to be Michael Bay's Blade Runner?
Yeah, or Michael Fassbender's Blade Runner.
I'd watch Michael Fassbender in Blade Runner.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's it in terms of Blu-rays.
That's not bad.
I do have some DVDs as well. From here, I can see Taffin.
Nice.
So you know that I've got a good DVD collection.
No, that is definitely... That's a work of art. You should put that in a frame.
One movie that I really want on Blu-ray is 28 Days Later. Because you know that you can't watch it on any streaming services. It's out of print on Blu-ray and DVD.
That's a crime.
So I've got it on DVD, but obviously DVD is not very good quality now when you want to watch it on a big telly.
Yeah.
But it costs like 25 quid to get it secondhand on Blu-ray.
Mm.
So I'm hoping now that they've released 28 years later, they're going to make that they'll find a way to redistribute 28 Days Later on Blu-ray.
Surely. Again. You know, what I do try to do on physical media is I try to get physical Switch games because I worry that the digital shop's going to disappear or something. So I mean, I've got a few of those. But
Nintendo are notorious for that, more so than any other platform, just being like, right, we're closing it now, bye.
They shut down the WiiWare shop, so you can't legally play Castlevania The Adventure Rebirth, which is honestly one of the best Castlevania games ever made. It's amazing.
I think they closed down the 3DS one recently.
They did, yes.
And they've also closed down the Wii U one.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's shit. Nintendo are terrible for that. It's awful.
So if you want to play the Wind Waker, fuck you, basically.
Yeah. I've got my Wii U with the Wind Waker HD.
Sick.
And I'm never getting rid of it because every so often I might want to go back and replay it.
Love that.
I'm going to say something controversial.
What?
I liked the Wii U.
Wii U was great, yeah. I never owned one, but I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, I got one mega cheap when it was clear that it was failing and they were putting them on sale. And I got like a collection of the best games for it. And we're just like, oh, this is great. I mean, I'm never going to buy anything else for it outside of these 10 games. But Hyrule Warriors is the best game ever made.
It's a very
Cannot
good
get
game.
Enough of it. And yeah, Wind Waker HD. And that weird zombie game they made where it was like a roguelike where if you died, then you permanently died and then you had to start a new character.
Oh, sweet.
There was loads of fun games on the Wii U.
So yeah, physical media is good. Digital media is bad. Whatever way you choose to view what happens in Vegas, you will have a bad time. There's my segue.
Oh, we're going to have to talk about it now.
The physical media versus digital media podcast.
We're going to have to talk about this movie now, which is disgraceful.
It is a disgrace.
You can tell that this movie came out around, well, it was being talked about and watched back when people actually bothered to rate things on IMDb because it has 187,000 ratings.
What?
Yeah.
187,000 ratings?
Yeah.
That's outrageous.
To give it a 6.1 out of 10, which tells us one thing, the people who have IMDb accounts are fucking stupid.
Yeah,
because this movie is terrible. this is such a bad film.
But that tells you, that actually is very interesting, and that tells you, doesn't it, about the time when I think people were probably less critical, or, to be honest. Like, there wasn't such a slew of content, was there? People were happy to go to the movies and watch a kind of sort of dud film just to pass the time, you know? It was a different time. It was a golden age. Although 2008, it's like, that's the time of the financial crash. So obviously they made this like before and then it came out just as the world was going to shit, I assume.
And the thing is that 2008, right, there were some very good movies that came out in 2008. The Dark Knight, for instance, the serious Batman film. We had Kung Fu
Panda. The serious
Panda.
Batman film that's good, not Sad Batman.
Which one's Sad Batman? Because he's always
the one with Ben Affleck being sad.
Oh yeah, that's
is awful. It Ben Affleck?
Yeah. I was going to say, have you seen the Robert Pattinson one yet?
No, the Batman.
The Batman.
Bothered to watch
it is
that.
Good. Genuinely, it's very good, and it feels very different from the other Batman movies.
Okay, I like him.
He's like a sad grungy boy Batman.
Oh, grunge Batman.
Yeah,
okay.
Grunge Man.
There's a Lane Staley type figure.
Exactly. Imagine if Lane Staley was Batman. And then the Riddler was Slipknot. That's basically what it is. it's good. And it's got your boy in it, the moon-faced cherub.
Oh, Paul Dano. Yeah, but isn't he wearing a gas mask so you can't see his moon face?
You see his face at times as well.
Okay. Okay, I'm looking at this. The Dark Knight. Indiana Jones and the Crystal of I can't even talk today. Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
What a terrible
That's a silly
film.
But
you do have Kung Fu Panda. You do have Mamma Mia. You've got Wall-E.
Wall-E is great. Eric loves that film as well. Sometimes he just wants to watch like the first half hour where there isn't even any dialogue. Or it's even longer. It's almost like an hour before there's any dialogue.
A lot of that movie has zero dialogue, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You got The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, a movie with a silly premise that I've never watched.
And Quantum of Solace. The worst Bond film.
I don't know. There's worse.
One of the worst Bond films. It's very bad.
In Bruges came out in 2008.
I've never seen that.
It's fun. It's a fun little movie. So there were some good movies that came out in 2008. This is not one of them.
this is definitely not one of them. This is going to be one of the worst films that came out in 2008. Although it was nominated for some Bad Movie Awards, and although we don't support the Razzies, it probably did deserve the nominations that it got.
Well, I don't think it necessarily deserves Cameron Diaz getting nominated for Worst Actress.
Oh, when... yeah, you're right. I didn't realize the categories. Okay, Worst Actress and Worst Screen Couple.
Worst Screen Couple, I can understand, because they are both awful, and when you put them together, they're even more awful. But I don't think she's the worst thing about this movie.
No, no. She's probably the best thing about this movie. Like, the only thing that makes it sort of barely tolerable. I don't begrudge it to her at all. I actually think she's really good and has done some great stuff. And, yeah. She shines. I just find Ashton Kutcher very irritating in this film. And very just kind of nothingy, do you know? He feels like a cardboard box in this film.
It feels as though Ashton Kutcher... his entire career is punking us. That it's all a prank that he has a career, because he is not good. Bless him. I don't think I've ever watched anything with him in where I've genuinely really liked his performance.
No, I've never seen The Butterfly Effect.
That's a good movie. Big one. I don't think that he's great in it. I think the thing that works about it is the premise. But yeah, he's just a bit of a non-entity, isn't he? It's like, okay, well, you can't get Josh Hartnett. Let's put Ashton Kutcher in instead. It's kind of it, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm looking at his filmography.
Have you ever seen Dude, Where's My Car?
Yeah.
As I have not seen Dude, Where's My
Car. That's one of those ones that at school we found really hilarious, and I'm sure watching back now we'll find it has aged very poorly. So we should definitely watch that at some point.
Yes, let's do that. Let's do that. Apart from that, what else have I seen him in? Just boring stuff. Valentine's Day. Ugh, of course, he's in Valentine's Day.
New Year's Eve, obviously.
New Year's
The worst of the stories of that very bad film.
He's in No Strings Attached, which is the one that we didn't watch about Friends with Benefits, with the other one being Friends with Benefits.
Did they come out at the same time? Is that
one
of those
situations? Yeah, they were the same year, I think. It was a volcano situation.
Yeah.
A volcano or a meteorite situation where that normally happens. And he then, of course, he was Stephen Jobs.
He died of ligma.
Have you seen his Steve Jobs film?
I can't remember if I've seen that one or the other one.
There's the Fassbender one, and there's the Ashton.
I think
Kutcher
I've
one.
Seen the Fassbender one, and it was actually better than I was expecting, but still not good. Yeah, I've seen the Fassbender one.
Right, okay. I don't think I've seen either of them.
But, like, who cares about Steve Jobs? He's just some old computer guy. Boring. I say, using my Apple computer to record this.
But the thing is, was it an interesting story to tell? That's the question. Because Facebook was kind of an interesting story to tell, showing the kind of horrible human beings that would create Facebook.
And it had guys rowing to Hall of the Mountain King.
Industrial rock version of Hall of the Mountain King.
Have I told you that Eric loves the Hall of the Mountain King?
No, that's
I've been
amazing.
Obviously trying to teach him about music. I put it on the other day just to talk to him about dynamics in music, you know, about how it gets fast. And at the end, like, he loves when it gets really loud and he's like, the castle is getting closer. And he like properly associates it with like wizards and castles and stuff. And I was explaining to him that it's like from a Norwegian play and whatever, like it's he loves it and wants to put it on, much to my wife's annoyance.
That's amazing. You should get him into Lowrider as well. That's another one that your wife doesn't like.
That's true. Another one that I really like that she detests. No, that one is on the playlist of like goofy songs that I made for him when he was a baby, and she always skips it. As soon as she hears that cowbell at the beginning, she's like, nope. But for people our age who are British, they will just associate that with Marmite, won't they?
Yeah, and it's a song that you either love or hate.
Yeah. And you know, I just realised that melody is very similar to I'm a Secret Lemonade Drinker.
They stole it.
They stole it. There's nothing new under the sun.
Although, you would pair an R. White's lemonade quite nicely with some Marmite toast.
Yeah. That's what I should have had for dinner.
They would go quite well together.
Yeah.
Maybe it's all a great plan. to get us to associate our whites with Marmite.
I knew it. Our whites, Marmites.
Our Marmites.
If anyone wants to know what British culture was like, sort of from the late 70s up to now, just listen to this show. We've got it all covered. DVDs.
When we went alive for
DVD commentaries,
a big chunk of it.
Secret lemonade drinker advert all the way through to DVD commentaries. We got it all.
Yes, we do.
Unlike this film, which has got nothing.
We've literally talked about nothing about this movie apart from how much we dislike Ashton Kutcher, which, to be fair, is a big reason why this movie sucks.
Yeah.
On top of that...
It's Seinfeld. It's a show about nothing.
On top of that, can I point out that I hated most of the supporting cast as well?
Yeah, it's a shame.
Rob Corddry's
like.
Character is awful. I really hate his character called Hater.
I think he was probably the worst character in the film, in which Ashton Kutcher played a very objectionable, awful character. Yeah, his character was worse.
Jason Sudeikis turns up as a bad boyfriend.
Yeah.
Just a template. Zach Galifianakis turns up as a weird friend, being Zach Galifianakis.
A template.
Lake Bell is the surly best friend to Cameron Diaz.
Again, totally wasted on this film. Right,
completely wasted. Kristen Ritter as well, completely wasted. Queen Latifah, completely wasted. Treat Williams, our boy. Yeah, our boy Treat Williams, who we love. Completely wasted, as he could have had an emotional dad speech, but he doesn't.
I know. It was really weird. Like, the beginning of that, it's like the way he was having a conversation with him, where it sort of, like, cheekily decided to hold back the information that he was his dad, as well as his boss, who was, like, firing him and then not firing him, and then playing basketball with him. It was just weird. It made no sense.
Yeah, it felt like there was something missing there. R.I.P. to Treat Williams, by the way.
Yeah.
Deep Rising, one of the greatest movies of all time. Will not hear a bad word about it.
Dolly Parton's Christmas on the Square, one of the best films of all time. Will not hear a bad word against it. But a great, great CV.
Yeah, no, love him. In loads of amazing cult movies over the years. Just a brilliant actor. Loads of charisma and charm.
Who in this film, unfortunately, was guilty of telling us the plot and the characterization when he said to Ashton Kutcher, sort of out of nowhere after they'd had this sort of basketball hoops game, as soon as you think you're going to lose, you're off.
Yes.
And you get it. Like, he's as soon as he thinks it's going to get hard, he's just going to run away. He's not going to commit to you, Vegas woman.
Yeah, and it's just like... It's all very on the nose.
Also, did you know everyone in America is from New York?
I mean, that's just reality, isn't it?
And everyone in Las Vegas is from New York.
I mean, that is reality. There's no one from Las Vegas.
Yeah, it's a hilarious thing.
They bus people in every single day to fill up Las Vegas. There's no one who lives there. Speaking of people who live in Las Vegas, actually, have you ever watched the remake of Fright Night?
I've never seen the original of Fright Night.
So Fright Night... the version with... I don't actually remember the original film very well. It might be the original set in Las Vegas as well. But the remake is great. And Colin Farrell is a predatory vampire. But the family that he's preying on with our main man, Anton Yelchin, they live in Las Vegas. And I always think that's such a cool... More stuff, I think, should focus on the people who actually live in Las Vegas and then work in Las Vegas, as opposed to it just being seen as this resort element. And I always find it interesting when they show you that little peek behind the curtain.
Well, you know, Las Vegas is getting major sports franchises right now. So a hockey team, an ice hockey team, an NHL team appeared there a few years ago. Appeared there out of the mist. You know what I mean?
They bought it from another
team. No, it was an expansion team. So it was a newly created team that they filled with other players. Okay. And I think they won the Stanley Cup a couple of years ago. Oh. I'm not big on ice hockey, but they are getting a Major League Baseball team in a few years' time. So the Oakland A's are moving from Oakland to Las Vegas, which everyone hates and is pissed off about. So they're moving to Vegas, and there's talk of American football going there as well. So if you live there, that's good for you, I suppose. But I think it's very much the market of sort of people visiting who want to see a sports game.
Yeah, it's not going to be for the people who live there. They're going to be priced out of tickets because it's going to go to to people who are there visiting.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Las Vegas?
No, I have very little interest as someone who doesn't like gambling or drinking.
Or smoking indoors.
Or smoking indoors. None of those things appeal to me.
You're not missing out. I told you, well, yeah, I'm sure I've told the story before. On the way back from our honeymoon in Hawaii, we were supposed to go via LA. We got rerouted to Las Vegas when our plane was cancelled. Got like an overnight flight from Maui into Las Vegas, arrived there at like 6 a.m. and then our plane home was at like 7 p.m. So we had like left our suitcases at the left luggage and just had this one day knackered, sweaty, got off a plane, just wandering around in the desert heat and through all the interconnected casinos that form this sort of underworld labyrinth that all smell of smoke because you're allowed to smoke in them. It's disgusting and awful.
Yeah, I think as the furthest I've got towards wanting to go to Las Vegas is the movie Showgirls, the greatest movie.
Oh, yeah. And we also went to In-N-Out Burger, which is supposed to be really good, and the bun of my burger was burnt.
Just an all-round failed trip, though.
All-round failed trip. But I did see a picture of Guy Fieri.
Oh, well, so, that's all right.
Then. Yeah.
That's
all right. There was like a Guy Fieri grill or something.
See, like,
we should have gone to instead of the In-N-Out Burger.
I wouldn't mind just walking along the strip and going to a show and having a meal somewhere. But that's like one night. And then I'd be like, okay, well, now what do I do? I don't want to gamble. I don't want to drink.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen the big bright lights. What can I do now? And yeah, it's not for me. It's not for me.
But and in that context, this is going to sound weird, but I actually didn't like that this film didn't actually spend much time in Vegas because it was violating the rule that all romantic comedies must be set in New York.
And that's actually a really good point that actually this movie, although it says what happens in Vegas, you spend a very limited amount of time in Vegas.
Yeah, it's playing off the saying what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. But nothing happened in Vegas. That's the thing. Well,
they Ashton win Kutcher, some money. That's it.
Yeah. And then a judge does something that is illegal and that no judge would ever do. And then they have to pretend to like each other. It's a bad setup, isn't it? It doesn't really work.
Genuinely, in terms of movie set in Vegas, The Hangover is so much better at exploring Vegas.
I've never seen it.
It's
one of those films that people really like, isn't it? If you were there at the time and you watched it with your buddies and whatever.
I'm not a big fan. It's got big beers with the broskies energy.
Yeah.
Which I'm not entirely fond of, but it does have some funny scenes and like the setup is quite funny, so much so that like everybody ripped it off for parody episodes for like several years afterwards where they're piecing together what happened the night before.
I'm sure I have seen some of those.
Yeah, I'm sure you've seen some of them. And then they did a couple
2009.
Of
2009. Okay.
Yeah, and then they did a couple of sequels that got progressively weirder and meaner. The last one just being an extremely strange film where at some point I think a giraffe gets beheaded.
It's, okay.
It's just really strange films. I think because the director, obviously, is Todd Phillips, who I think we've talked about him before. He got started with a documentary about Gigi Allen.
Yes, that's right.
and then did Road Trip and Old School.
Oh, yes, that's right.
So, like,
you know, Gigi Allen's real name was Jesus Christ.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And basically, sort of, he then got kind of stuck in.
Oh, and he did the Starsky and Hutch remake, which is terrible, but has what I think is a brilliant performance by Snoop Dogg.
Yes, I think it's a fun, terrible film, Starsky and Hutch, from what I remember.
Yeah,
it's not a good movie, but you can still just sit there and watch it.
Oh, and then he did We Live in a Society. I always forget it's the same guy.
Yeah, so I think he started off doing this, you know, this quite raw documentary, and then also did a documentary about frat life, but somehow got roped into doing, like, first a teen comedy and then silly 2000s era comedies, and didn't really get out of it until he did Joker. And yeah, I just think it's such a strange career that I think there's always been this meanness to his films that has sometimes worked and sometimes hasn't. So like Old School has this mean streak to it, which kind of works.
Old School is rubbish. We should talk about that sometime.
We should talk about it sometime.
Road Trip is also rubbish. and I have a lot of problems with that film, but there is kind of a quite funny core to it, isn't there? And all the scenes with Tom Green that are sort of weird and quite off the wall.
Yeah,
You know, if Todd Phillips brought us the tiny salmon swimming upstream, then, you know, I can pat him on the back for that.
Yeah, and then the Hangover movies are quite mean. And then Joker. Joker is a movie that I think we should talk about at some point, although there's zero romance in it, so I don't know when. It would have to be like a bonus. Are you saying damn it because you don't want to watch Joker?
No, I do. I'm more interested in that than The Batman.
Yeah, The Batman is a good film, actually. It is worth watching that. But Joker is basically Baby's first taxi driver.
Yeah.
And lots of people got really annoyed saying, oh, it's going to be this massive alt-right, you know, incel movie. Yeah. Actually, it's the opposite if you look at it objectively. It's actually a very strong anti-capitalist movie.
Yeah, I'm very much down with that.
And yeah, it is an interesting film in terms of how the media portrayed it before it came out, having not seen anything about it, versus what the end result was, and how actually the media depiction of the film has prevailed as the cultural idea of it, as opposed to actually what it was. Because really, it's a movie about how capitalism is failing vulnerable people in society.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. It's fine. It's not the greatest movie ever made, like some people say it is, but equally, it's not this incel disaster that other people say it is.
So that, in all that context, I am interested in seeing it at some point.
Yeah, yeah, and it's got the sequel this year as well.
Yes.
Folie à deux, which is incredibly pretentious. Although it does have Steve Coogan in it.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if it's been announced who he's playing yet, but yeah.
Well, surely he's playing Batman.
I'd love Steve Coogan as Batman. That would be brilliant. But yeah, Lady Gaga as Harley Quinn. And then Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker again.
Do you love a bit of Phoenix?
Yeah. Yeah. He should have been in this. He should have been Cameron Diaz.
Yeah, he would have nailed it.
What else? I really don't want to talk about this movie, man. It's so boring.
Well, let's just go through it. So, like, Ashton, it's set up. Cameron Diaz is she's a career woman. That's the trope, isn't it? I can't remember. It's quite something lazy like that.
Yeah, she only cares about her career in some kind of finance job, something like that.
It's never quite clear, is it?
Yeah, it's something. Something in an office.
And Ashton Kutcher does something in a warehouse.
He works with wood.
Yeah.
He's some kind of carpenter.
He's a woodman who works for his dad, who's also a woodman. And then both of them end up in Vegas trying to forget the fact they've got fired or out of a relationship, whatever. There's an annoying scene where they've got the wrong room and there's screaming and like a sort of fight. And Rob Corddry's there being annoying. And then they have the night together and wake up in the morning. And then one of them puts the quarter in the slot machine, the other one takes the money or something, so they both have a claim on the money, and they get back to New York, and this random, like, really weirdly conservative judge, like, forces them to be married to get the money, which I don't think you can do, but whatever.
Yeah.
So then that's the setup. They have to live together and go to marriage counseling, even though they got married when they were drunk, right? So they have to live together and go to marriage counseling to get the money and, like, prove that they're, like, have a strong marriage or whatever. And then, obviously, they end up really falling for each other and that kind of thing. So that's basically the whole film. But the conservative judge's politics is an interesting part that is not really properly explored. That could be a whole different film. And at that point, I was like, this is getting interesting. I hope this turns into, like, a John Grisham courtroom drama. A legal thriller.
But instead you have, instead what happens is, yeah, so they've got married. Ashton Kutcher plays a slot machine using a quarter from Cameron Diaz. So they both claim that they've got a right to the money. And the judge goes, well, I'm going to make you stay married and then you can decide what you want to do with the money. What then happens is basically them trying to get out of this by tricking the other person. So it's like Cameron Diaz inviting a load of attractive women round so that Ashton Kutcher sleeps with one, or Ashton Kutcher telling Cameron Diaz that the marriage counseling has been cancelled in a very boring, like, chase scene.
Hijinks ensue.
And it's just like, they spend very little time trying to know one another, but the movie expects you to think that they've spent this time trying to know one another.
That's exactly it. It wants you to believe that they're falling for each other, but never actually shows you any moment of that happening, apart from potentially one scene where, like, they've both tried to throw a party so that the other person will get off with someone else, and then they both end up, like, in the bathroom together talking about it. And that, like, that's where the first time where you see them be vulnerable for each other, and that was, like, a good scene, and then everything else that happened after it was shit.
Yeah, that's true. That one scene was good. But yeah, the rest of them are terrible. It's basically just one-upmanship, trying to be an awful human being until then suddenly they like one another. And you're like, oh, okay, that came out of nowhere. Fine.
And then they win the court case and Rob Corddry gets to say, I am the law, bitches, which was funny.
Yes. And basically it goes through the thing of Cameron Diaz thinking, oh, he doesn't love me. And then him going, oh, but I do love you. And then they kind of, that's it.
Yeah, there's a breakup based on something I can't even remember. It's so boring.
Yeah, there's something to do with he's trying to get her to sign some kind of document or something. And then she finds the document. Is that it?
To trick her into saying that he can have the money. It's, yeah. But then I think like he wins the case anyway or something. I can't remember.
Yeah, because Cameron Diaz doesn't want the money in the end because she's like, I just don't want to be married to this guy anymore.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
That's stupid. If I was Cameron Diaz and I was pissed off at this man, I'd be like, yeah, I want my half and I want my divorce and I want you out of my life.
Yeah.
And then I'd be maybe she's like rich, swanning so it up it, with but... like $2 million.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of money.
Yeah, bloody rich people. Yeah. That's the problem, is that you've got a Nepo baby carpenter and a rich person. Neither of these people...
Name a more iconic couple.
Neither of these people will see the light of heaven.
No.
They're just a couple of incredibly irritating human beings. And nothing happens in the movie that's interesting at all. And then it ends.
No, and every time another character comes on screen, you're like, oh, this character's come on to like potentially change it up and get us away from whatever boring stuff these guys are doing. And then that character ends up being even more irritating.
Yeah, every single member of the supporting cast is wasted. This movie sucks, man. This movie is very bad.
And also, there's lots of like stuff that really, really dates it, like a lot of casual homophobia. There's a bit that makes light of domestic violence. There's like casual misogyny and sexism, and it's got that fucking Jet song as well. So all of that. I hate that song so much, and I just knew it was coming as well. Do you know
this
what I mean?
This is the like, era of the Jet
a film
song.
From the mid-2000s, a rubbish comedy from the mid-2000s, but that has a bit of budget and stars behind it. You know that song's coming. You know it's going to be in there somewhere, along with You Sexy Thing, which I also hate.
Do you not like You Sexy Thing?
No, I hate it.
Why do you hate You Sexy Thing?
It's a like gammon disco song. Do you know what I mean? Like it's one of those songs that comes on at like old people discos that they think is a bit rude.
You're not a fan of Hot Chocolate?
I like drinking it.
Not the band Hot Chocolate. I mean, I guess the problem is that it's a great song, but then it's very intrinsically tied to the full Monty, I guess.
Yes.
And maybe that's where exactly it then became this cultural phenomenon. As opposed to being treated as a great song in its own right, it became this wider thing through the full Monty, which is a fine
that's
film.
That's exactly it. I don't have a problem with the full Monty, but the cultural sort of, yeah. It became a bit of a British cultural phenomenon that was, a bit weird.
Yeah. What about, speaking of other songs about sexy people, what about Sex Bomb?
Yeah, that's
you,
sort of...
How do you feel about Sex
almost,
Bomb?
Almost there. I don't dislike it as much as those two.
I
don't like it
Sex
either.
Bomb.
It's got Moose, a cheeky energy, hasn't it? It's Moose T, isn't it?
Moose T and Tom Jones. What a great duo.
You can't knock Moose T, can you? But it's got nothing on Horny, obviously. It's like a vastly inferior version of Horny. Moose Tea featuring Hot and Juicy.
I do like Sex Bomb though. And then
it's essentially the same song. It's the same beat, more or less the same instrumentation.
But which one of them was covered by Wagner for the X Factor?
Didn't he do like a medley of both?
No, it was...
Oh, I love Wagner.
Which one was sex? One of them was a medley of Love Shack and She Bangs by Ricky Martin. And one of them, he just did. So did he just do She Bangs or did he do Sex Bomb? One of them was then made into a medley with
the medley was Love Shack and She Bangs, and he played the bongos in the middle of it. Yes, again, if you don't know what we're talking about, this we moved on slightly from DVD commentaries to
what
a guy who was on the X
what
Factor.
What you need to know is that one year, Jeffrey Dean Morgan became a character actor and dressed up as a man called Wagner with long hair and a bad beard to then take part in it. Doesn't he look just like Jeffrey Dean Morgan, though?
Yes, he does. Wagner, X Factor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no. X Factor, I just Googled him. X Factor star Wagner deletes OnlyFans account. This was like a year ago.
Oh, man. I missed out on Wagner OnlyFans.
X Factor star Wagner fears he will be assassinated after being ... Oh, no, it's the Daily Mail link. I can't click on that. After getting death threats from people confusing him with murderous Russian mercenary group with the same name. Oh, no. No, don't go after our boy.
The internet is a beautiful thing.
Singer said he received threats to cut off his testicles, but said he was ready for Russian assassins and would use his martial arts.
That's incredible. That's so good.
I love him. Absolute legend.
How the hell did we get on to talking about Wagner?
Yeah, oh, even his own site says, you will know me from ITV's The X Factor UK. I'm most known for my performances of She Bangs and Love Shack with my bongos. There you go.
There we are. Perfect.
I hate Love Shack as well. We were talking about that the other day.
We were talking about
a lot of songs I hate.
I like Love Shack a lot. You don't. I don't care for Rock Lobster, though.
That is an annoying song.
I'm not a fan of Rock Lobster. Although I do like the person who did a System of a Down cover of it.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Anyway, yeah, the music in this movie is as irritating as the rest of it. It feels very late 2000s. It's got that nasty quality to it, that cruel quality to it. It's not funny. It's rubbish. Choose a better rom-com.
Yeah.
Ashton Kutcher, get out of my house. You're not welcome here. Take your pointy nose and your broad chin and get out. Oh, broad chin Kutcher is what they call him. Behind his back.
And to his face.
Told off by his mates. And to his face. Yeah, I hate this film, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's just it's a nothing.
It's a bad pick.
A puff of dust of a film.
Yeah. A wet fart.
Yes, exactly. Anything else you want to say about what happens in Vegas?
No, it's irritating and bad. Don't watch it.
I'd give you some trivia, but I really do not care about this film enough to look up some trivia for it.
It was directed by Tom Vaughan, who is a Scottish director who's mostly done TV, including some quite British stuff, including Cold Feet.
British stuff.
I know, including Cold Feet, Dr. Foster, 3 episodes of that Queen Victoria one. It's quite a weird CV here.
Oh, yes, and then he did some movies before that. So it looks like he did some movies alongside TV, then did a few films, and then went back to TV again. Fair enough, if you want to do TV. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Did an episode of The Flight Attendant, which is a show that I believe people enjoy.
I've never heard of that.
It's what's her face? The one good person from Big Bang Theory. Hayley Quote.
I know the one you mean. Yeah.
Basically she's a flight attendant who ends up getting embroiled in some kind of spy drama, and it's sort of like a sort of comedy drama reaction-y thing.
Right.
Also with Shoshana from Girls in it.
Oh, yes. Correctly. Right.
Yeah, from what I know, it was an enjoyable romp that people liked.
Okay.
But yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. But yeah, this film, I would erase this from your CV, my good man.
Yes. Get rid.
Yep.
Get rid. How are we ranking this?
Well, how many days do you have to stay married to someone you don't like to get the money?
3. All for Treat Williams.
Yeah, that's fair. For the memory of Treat Williams, we'll do that. Maybe two for him, one for Rob Corddry because he's great in Hot Tub Time Machine, and that's about it.
Oh, yeah. We need to talk about Hot Tub Time Machine.
Yeah. That is a very stupid but quite enjoyable film, as I recall.
Yeah. Next
are
movie.
Are we going to random generate again?
Yeah, shall we random generate?
I'm feeling
again?
Less confident about it now, but I think it's the way to go.
So give me a number between 1 and 4.
1.
And give me a number between 1 and 12.
8.
Strange magic again.
Oh no. Well, I guess that's what we're going to do. We're going to watch it again.
Give me another one.
Wait, is this? Are you only in the romantic comedy section or is this
I'm
the
just
whole
in the romantic
of,
comedies. I'm
how is
just
that in romantic comedies?
It's a romantic movie. It's a comedy.
That's true, yeah. 3.
And between 1 and 12?
2.
We are watching My Super Ex-Girlfriend.
Oh, okay. Have I seen that?
Luke Wilson dumps his girlfriend, who's actually a superhero.
No, I haven't seen that. I was thinking
I think
of
I've
Super,
watched
which is
this.
A different film.
A very different film. I think I've seen this before. I do think I've watched this.
Okay, interesting. Well, superheroes are everywhere now, aren't they? So I'm sure this is better than all that Marvel rubbish.
Back in my day, we had real superheroes like Uma Thurman.
This actually looks kind of cool.
This looks silly. This looks I'm down with it.
Dated and silly in a way that I think I might like.
Yeah, let's give it a go. Let's go in open-minded and see whether My Super Ex-Girlfriend becomes a true gem.
Nice. All right, well, thanks for tuning into this episode and listening to us talk about DVD commentaries. Just tune in next week to find out how to be a secret lemonade drinker. You can find us on Twitter at Big Boys Don't Pod. You can listen to us right now on a podcast. You can email us bigboysdontcrypodcast@gmail.com.
Can you tell it's a Friday?
Can you tell it's the end of the week? And yeah, just my brain is smooth at this point in the week. And I've eaten too much pasta. Yeah. Where were we? I've said the things, haven't I? Let's just end it. Bye.
You've said the things. Bye.
Get out of here. Go outside and touch grass and don't watch this film.
Get out of here.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here. Can I stop recording now? Are you still recording?